I was researching a talk that I gave this past weekend on little R republicanism, which at the end of the day is basically kind of the secular version or secularized version of what we used to call subsidiarity. And one of the great men of letters and one of the greatest orators of all time, a hero, a personal hero of mine, an American hero, is a man named Patrick Henry. And Henry is famous for a couple of speeches that he gave. The Liberty or Death speech. He gave a speech against the Stamp Act and the Virginia House of Burgesses in 1769 that most people don't know about. What also most people don't know about Henry, this was a manly man. This guy, when he was called to lead his militia because he was the governor of Virginia, he didn't just go to the rear. He rode at the front. And he led the militia. He was a great governor. He was governor four times of Virginia. So when the American founding fathers were talking about ratifying the U.S. Constitution in the state of Virginia, the only state that really mattered because it was the biggest, most populous, had the greatest history to it, and four of the first five U.S. presidents would ultimately come from Virginia, the Old Dominion. Henry had read this thing called the Constitution. He'd looked at it going like, I don't like it. I don't want it. We just threw off a man that we called a tyrant and a tyrannical system. Why in the hell why do we want to adopt a new one? We want to create a new central system of our own. But this is the most amazing thing. This has been stricken from the history books, but it's in the transcripts of the ratification debates in Virginia of the U.S. Constitution. On the first day, Frank, or the second day, actually, that Henry got to speak, this was his primary complaint. Now, remember, when somebody thinks of a classic liberal and an American, you probably think of, and a patriot, you'll probably think of Patrick Henry. Here's what Henry thought about the Constitution and what his great fear was. Most people won't believe this, so look it up for yourself. You can find it in Eliot's debates on the ratification of the U.S. Constitution. Trust me, though, this is what he said. He said this. Quote, my great objection to this government is that it does not leave us the means of defending our rights or of waging war against tyrants. Henry wanted the right to take out a tyrant. Now, this is in the early days of the monster, the 9-billion-headed hydra called liberalism. So liberalism originally contained components of correction in it, is the point. There are no components of correction any longer. We've used them all. None of them work.
It probably comes as no surprise to you that I'm acutely aware of how to get onto government watch lists. So if you want to get onto a government watch list, first of all, listen to me and subscribe to my Substack and then tell people about the ideas that I write about, right? Because it's basically my personal mission to be sent to the gulag. But one book that does get you put on government watch list is, oddly enough, the 18th century volume John Locke's Two Treatises on Government, right? A very early piece of liberalism, far earlier than John Stuart Mill or any of the Victorian liberals.
Right.
So what he said in there was that there was a right to revolt. And he said that this was an appeal to heaven. He actually called it an appeal to heaven. He said, when there are tyrants in government, that you have the right to overthrow them by force. It's not illegitimate. And he only explained where legitimacy can be found wanting. And if in those conditions, you can say the government is tyrannical and you have a right to revolution. Now, this is very much disappeared from the popular discourse and from constitutional politics as well. And when you bring it up to people who talk about this or defend our current system, what they say is, oh, well, look, there's no need for a right to revolution nowadays. We've got elections. So you can get rid of people. If you don't like them, you can just vote them. You can just vote them out. That's
right.
Fine. Yeah, of course you can.
Sure.
Of course you can. Because, we've got great alternatives in Britain. You know, we've got a wonderfully healthy political culture where, we've got practically every perspective is flattered by some representative. And, of course, you just have to go and vote for your people that you like. And who like you as well, because they do, don't they?
No, they love you.
Oh, they do love you.
They love you.
They love you with policies that want to destroy you, your family, your God, your culture, and your nation. This is what they call love and freedom. And you're free to agree with it. But the thing is that the right to revolution was very much an early liberal idea. And it was central to the idea of early liberalism, because if you didn't have that right, then you didn't really have any sincere commitment to liberty, because, of course, liberty can be deprived. And even if you have a liberal system, it can degrade, as ours has now. Now, the idea that the caveat for that is elections is risible when, of course, if you did have a tyranny, let's just say, for example, that our government, our system is somewhat tyrannical. You know, just for argument's sake, I'm not saying it really is. But, you know, let's just imagine for a second that, you know, that these Satan-worshipping, Moloch-worshipping paedophiles don't have our interests at heart. So if that were the case, then, of course, the elections probably wouldn't be legitimate, would they? So the idea that elections are a replacement for the right to revolution isn't really a serious one. Now, there's an even better case for this, which actually goes beyond any critique of liberalism. I mean, it comes back to what the purpose of government is. And John Gray makes this point very well. He gave a lecture at the end of last year that explained about legitimacy. And he said it doesn't matter what kind of government it is. If it's not legitimate, it doesn't have a right to rule you. And he said that's not really anything to do with elections either. He said that governments have a duty to the people. This is what makes them legitimate, or gives them, you know, the legal right to rule. And that's that they provide some basic security, and that they're serious about it, that they can provide some prosperity, or they're serious about trying to do so, and that they enjoy some public trust, or at least not a complete absence of it. And in none of these cases do our governments satisfy the case for legitimacy. And he of course concludes that our governments are not legitimate. Now, that's the fundamental point from the point of view of critics of liberalism, is that the liberal governments no longer have any right to govern you anyway. Regardless of what they say the elections do, none of them discharge their duties of government towards the people. They're derelict in their duties. And the idea that government has a duty, or indeed that it is a duty, is not one that we hear at all in the media. And that's because it's absent from our political leadership.